Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Mario!
Today is October 25, 2015, and this is episode 95, episode 95, a GameBuoy flashlight on Luigi's Mansion. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're continuing our Ninty 90s by taking a look at a well-loved little series of games in which Nintendo dabbled with some spooky themes. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy McWag, you want to get us started?
Yeah, but before I do that, at first I thought you were, like, just forgetting how to say 25th, but then I figured out what you were doing.
You're welcome.
So, in our follow-ups, we have the latest details on the upcoming patch 3.1 for Final Fantasy XIV. That's going to be coming on November 10th, and it's going to feature some yummy things like Knights of the Round EX Primal Fight, with some, quote, very good weapons for loot. It's also going to be introducing anima weapons, which are the new relic weapons, which will be in the 3.15 patch, so, like, you know, probably within a few weeks of the initial patch, I would assume.
And yeah, they've specifically said those will be available before the end of the year.
Good. And then there's also exploratory missions, so there are three different modes, easy, normal, and hard, and you can only do hard mode with your free company.
Well, and I'm not quite there yet, but I think these might be new missions. I think exploratory missions are already in the game, but they're adding stuff.
Ah, okay, yeah, I'm definitely not that far as well.
Yeah, I'm not super sure of that. I do play the game, but I've been taking it kind of easy since I kind of burnt out on it by playing like 5 hours a night every night for weeks.
Yeah, I just ran out of paid time and then had some financial struggles, so...
LOL money.
Anyway, there's also going to be things like new little treats in the Gold Saucer, like the Ifrit minion will be added, and there's going to be some other things as well, like new hairstyles and stuff that's just, you know, not just in Gold Saucer. And then there's the Lord of Vermilion minigame,
yes,
which I can't help but think is a nod to Lord of Vermilion.
Well, it's not even a nod. This is basically like a minigame version of the Lord of Vermilion gameplay that you play using your minions. Yeah.
Well, here comes Square Enix for pet battles.
Right? Except this is, you know, rather than just taking a little silly, like, Pokemon base, this is, like, a real cool, complex game. So I'm super stoked.
I heard that read on multiple levels. But yes, I'm excited to get back into the game as well and catch up so that I can participate in all of this content.
Excellent. Patch 3.1 is going to be launching on November 10th, 2015.
So not long now.
And there will be a new collaboration event with Final Fantasy XI on November 11th.
I'm cute.
Please look forward to it. We also have word here that the upcoming Mario Tennis Ultra Smash is going to have a wide assortment of online modes and features, as well as amiibo support.
Cool.
Yeah. Please look forward to that when it hits in pretty much worldwide the week of November 19th.
Well, that'll be fun for the Thanksgiving holiday.
The recently released 3DS Dragon Ball fighting game, Dragon Ball Z Extreme Butoden, is getting free content patches now. And the first of them is actually going to include an entire online versus mode.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's really cool. It's also going to include new assist characters, including one of Vegeta doing his dance from Kami to Kami when he was trying to entertain Beerus-sama.
Oh my god.
Yeah, right? I'm super excited. This is apparently going to be releasing shortly in Japan. It's expected to release here at some point as well, so please look forward to it.
And this is news that you would usually be reading, but Destiny's Trials of Osiris will be returning next Friday, October 30th, so just later this week, when
Excellent.
Everyone's starting to get ready to get spoopy.
You know, that's something I didn't really get to do a whole lot of, so I'm definitely looking forward to it now. I've been super into Destiny these last couple weeks. Sort of went next level thanks to one of our listeners, actually, Your Enzyme,
oh.
who got me into the King's Fall raid.
Oh, congratulations.
And and having played that content now, I'm like more passionate about Destiny than ever. Loving it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you've really been feeling the Taken King and all the changes they've made.
Yeah, it's I really do feel like with the Taken King, it's probably the most solid game Bungie's ever made. So I'm a huge fan, super into it. And we're going to talk a lot about Bungie today. So let's keep this show rolling. We have a follow-up here on Arkham Knight. This is, of course, the PC release of Arkham Knight. You may recall this came out, you know,
Broken Knight.
Well, exactly. It came out basically at the same time as the other versions of the game, but it was basically unplayably broken. But we now have word that it's apparently been all patched up and fixed and will be going back on sale after having been delisted a few months ago. It's going to be going back on sale on PC on October 28th on all of the standard digital services, Amazon, Steam, Origin probably. So please look forward to it.
I suppose.
We also have word that Knights of Pen and Paper 2 is available on Steam now. It came out previously on iOS and Android. I'm a big fan of the first Knights of Pen and Paper, so I'm really excited to check this out. We also have word that Electronic Super Joy is coming to the Wii U. This is a musically charged platformer, so definitely something to check out if you're into the kinds of games that we typically are. It'll be releasing on November 5th. Blaze Blue Central Fiction is getting a Japanese arcade launch in late November. Dissidia Final Fantasy will be launching in Japanese arcades on November 26th.
Oh, that's exciting.
And last but most certainly not least on our release dates, we have word that Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 will finally be releasing on PC in December. So please look forward to it. And Slaggy, unless you have any other follow-ups, it's probably time for some news.
It's time for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god. News.
Smash comes before the discussion this week.
It does, because it ties directly into what we're going to talk about for the second So Controversial. Basically, Kotaku went in too hard on Bungie, and so then they did a video interview with Kim Swift basically talking about how hard games development is.
All right, well, I have everything open, so...
All right, I'd like you to start.
Speaking of GameBuoy flashlights, for the Wii U version of Slender the Arrival, you'll be able to use your Wiimote as a flashlight. So if you are interested in being spoopy and trying to find your friend who is totes obsessed with Slenderman, you can go ahead and get it on the Wii U eShop right now for $10.
Oh, fantastic. It'll also be releasing in the EU territories October 29th. I'm a big fan of the Slendy mythos, so I'm super stoked for this, and definitely something I'll be checking out. I'm obviously familiar with the game on PC, but I love Wiimotes as a flashlight. Like, that's something I love.
Right.
So I'm definitely interested in checking this out again. Oh, here's one I think you're probably super excited about.
Yes. You mean that Pikachu's coming to Build-A-Bear Workshop?
Yeah, I do mean that Pikachu's coming to Build-A-Bear Workshop.
So next year, Build-A-Bear Workshop will be letting you make your own Pikachu at stores in the U.S., Europe, Canada, and Australia. And if you go to Build-A-Bear and make a Pikachu, you'll get a Pokeball hoodie to decorate it with, and you'll get a Pikachu sound chip and a special promo TCG card. But if you order it online, you can also have the option of getting a Charizard costume. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be, honestly, getting two because I want the experience of making a Pikachu. I've never built a Build-A-Bear. So
neither have I.
We should go build a Build-A-Bear.
We are adults, but we should go build a Build-A-Bear. Let's forget about that for a few hours and do that when this happens in early 2016. We also have word here that the Wii U is getting a version of the recently released 3DS game, Smile Basic. This is obviously...
Oh, that's the game where you go and get pumpkin spice lattes, right?
Right? Listen to Adele and Taylor Swift all day. No, but seriously, this is actually really cool. It's basically just like a basic app for 3DS and Wii U. You will be able to send programs that you've written between the two. And I think this is so freaking cool. In Japan, actually, Smile Basic is going to be getting some DLC that will allow users, in conjunction with Bandai Namco, to actually use art assets from some Bandai Namco games in your basic games that you're making.
That's so cool.
The Wii U version.
Way to go, Bamco.
Dude, right? The Wii U version is going to support the gamepad, the Wii Remote, and USB keyboards. So if you're into BASIC, if you used to be BASIC, you want to get back into it, this is definitely something I'd recommend you check out. It looks like it has a good user interface. It definitely looks like you can do some cool stuff with it. And the fact that they're supporting it with, you know, art stuff, art assets from Bandai Namco and stuff, I just think that's really neat. I'm super excited. I'll be checking this out for sure.
I mean, between Mario Maker and now Smile Basic with Bamco Bandai art assets, I did that on purpose, by the way. I mean, there's just, like, all sorts of tools now for people, especially youngsters who, you know, want to play around with game dev.
Excellent. Yeah, I totally agree, and I think it's totally cool.
So we have word that Nintendo is going to be putting out a Yo-Kai Watch bundle for the holiday season, and it is a 2DS bundle. So, you know, the game by itself will be $39.99 retail price, but the bundle with a red Nintendo 2DS will be $99.99, which is the, you know, normal price for a 2DS. So if you're in the market for a 2DS or you want to get one for your, I was going to say child, but, you know, for anybody who might want a 2DS and Yo-Kai Watch.
Well done.
You know, that's a pretty good deal. It's like getting Yo-Kai Watch for free. Of course, it is a digital download. So if you are not a fan of digital content, you know, and would prefer the physical copy, you'll just have to go old school.
But something cool is that it's going to be pre-installed on the system. It's not a download. So you can immediately start playing the game, like, the minute you open it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's coming November 6th, so
yeah.
I'm super excited. I know a lot of people are super hyped for Yo-Kai Watch, so.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's going to do pretty well over here.
Yeah, I'm super hyped, so can't wait. All right, well, that's about it for our news. We do, unfortunately, have a little bit of
Doom and
So this is unfortunately not really coming as a surprise to anybody, I think, but we have official word from Sony Computer Entertainment Executive Vice President Masayasu Ito-san, who recently was talking very candidly with 4Gamer.net, and on the subject of PlayStation Vita, Ito-san confirmed that there are literally no first-party Vita games in development. The only game that they were, like, looking at for Vita development was Gravity Rush 2, and that has been pushed over to PlayStation 4. The exact quote is, "Currently, there are no first-party titles that are in development for the PlayStation Vita. Third-party companies are working hard on the PlayStation Vita, so we here at Sony Computer Entertainment have strategized to focus on our new platform of PlayStation 4. Unfortunately, that kind of sums it all up right there. If you love the Vita like I do and you love it for third-party stuff, cool. We still got time. We still got some games coming. If you were hoping for more things like Gravity Rush, you were hoping there might eventually be like a medieval game or something. Unfortunately, it looks like you might be shit out of luck, and that sucks.
That sucks.
However, you know, related to Doom and Gloom, we've also got some news that is
controversial.
Oh my god.
So the first controversial piece of news we have here is word that on Amazon for Rock Band 4, some very positive reviews have been popping up that appear to be related to the personal accounts of various Harmonix employees. On the scale of things, I personally don't view this as that awful. A lot of people feel like this is super deceptive of Harmonix. But, you know, I guess I just feel like just because you worked on a game doesn't mean you can't have an opinion on it, I guess. But it's tricky. I wouldn't want this to be like, I wouldn't want them to have an effect on the Metacritic score. But at the same time, you look at Amazon and there are so many reviews that are just like piss poor, super poorly written, super like infactual, like unfactual, not factual, non-factual. It's just like, I can't really get that mad about some employees posting reviews that at least are factually correct. Like, you don't have someone saying, I'm so mad, my instruments don't work, with no explanation or whatever. You don't have people like, all DLC broken, why I not have money back? Like, I can't really hold it against them that they wrote some really well-written, well-researched reviews because at least it got actual correct information out there. I don't know. Saeed, what do you think about this kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I think Harmonix's response kind of says it all. You know, they said we'd like for our employees to identify themselves if they're, you know, posting reviews of our own games, and, you know, that they believe that it wasn't with ill intent, you know, but they don't condone it. So, you know, I don't think it was Harmonix scandal. I think it was just some people at Harmonix, you know, kind of making poor choices.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And I guess the thing is, you know, I've been in bed with games devs before. Like, this is just like the least shady publicity thing I've ever heard. Like, some of the stuff that I used to hear about that publishers would do.
Money hatting and...
Oh, that's like basic tier. I mean, like literally sending people gifts. Like literally like, hey, we will give you this game early if you promise us beforehand you're going to give us some positive reviews and YouTube views and stuff. Like it gets so much more manipulative than just some employees posting positive reviews.
Well, I mean, you know.
Or money hatting.
There has been in the past couple of years, whether done so in a positive way or not, hint, hint, you know, a call for more transparency in...
Are you literally talking about ethics in games journalism?
I'm just saying that, you know, even with that whole business that, you know, at least like games media has really made a point to be like, you know, hey, we're being transparent about this here. So, I mean, yeah. I think which is good on them, even though, you know, I was not on that ship. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I can understand where people are coming from, but I don't think it's like a secret conspiracy, you know. But try and tell that to the interwebs.
Yep, absolutely. We also have word here also via Kotaku, so well done this week. This is a piece called The Messy True Story Behind the Making of Destiny. And this is just a fantastic expose. It was written by Jason Schreier, who basically for the last year and a half has been slowly piecing together the story of Destiny behind the scenes, why it, you know, seemed to change shape so starkly from what was shown for years to what was actually released after things went dark, you know, 9 months before the game actually hit. And, you know, very similar to Halo 2, it turns out... you know, which was also a Bungie game. It turns out that Bungie had a lot of ideas in place, but that they hadn't really solidified it into a game. And when it came time to solidify it into a game, they found that they couldn't meet their deadlines because they needed more time to work. And basically, you know, a lot of stuff got taken out for better and for worse. And just it was a real mess. But they then, you know, the whole internet basically jumped on Bungie for like, hey, I read the story. You guys are so awful. I can't dare support this. Kotaku actually then, later on in the week, did a really great interview with Kim Swift, who we've talked about here on the show a lot. She's currently over at Amazon Game Studios, but you're probably most familiar with her as the lead designer on games like Portal and Quantum Conundrum. And basically, they just have a great conversation about how hard it is to make games, you know, how easily things can go off the rails. And it's just really interesting because it almost felt like Kotaku was acknowledging that, you know, their piece on Bungie, it wasn't like a hit piece. It was a real look at the game and games development and the challenges thereof. And people took it as very negative against Bungie, even though that wasn't really their intention. And so I just thought it was really great that they sort of managed... the expectation, they sort of managed the response by then doing a really candid interview with a games creator on how easily these things can go sideways. So I just thought it was a really great way for them to take ownership and to sort of advance the dialogue.
Yeah.
As always, you know, for our smashes, because we are considering this our smash of the week, we just always look at things that are like, you know, this is something that someone in games journalism handled really well, wrote really well, presented really well. And like I said, I that's why I think this meets that criteria.
Indeed.
All right. Well, with all of that having been said, it's time to delve into this discussion. So let's talk about the spookiest adventures of our favorite Mario brother.
Hey, Captain Spike, you just won a mansion.
What?
Hey, Captain Spike, you just won a mansion.
What?
hey, Captain Spike, you just won a mansion.
I don't know what the correct response is.
Well, maybe calling your bro and going to check out the mansion, even though you didn't enter a contest. And that's
all
the
right.
plot of the first Luigi's Mansion game.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we're here to talk about the Luigi's Mansion games. The first one was a GameCube launch title in North America, right?
It sure was.
Excellent. And this was released, actually worldwide, it looks like.
Yeah.
Released in Japan September 14th, 2001, North America November 18th, 2001, and Europe May 3rd, 2002. This is the second title in the Mario franchise where Luigi is the main character. And, as Slaggy McWaggy pointed out, the game takes place in a haunted mansion, which Luigi wins in a contest that he never entered.
And you say the second game that he was the star of, and the first one was Mario is Missing.
Indeed, and you know, this game actually starts off with Mario missing, so this is a little bit of a theme. This is, of course, the first appearance of Professor E. Gadd, who has actually popped up in a handful of Mario Universe games.
Yeah, he was in Sunshine.
Indeed. And he's been in like one of the upcoming tennis game or something. He was in one of the Mario parties. He's been in some of the Mario and Luigi games. He's also in Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, which is the sequel to Luigi's Mansion, which we will obviously also be talking about today. Anyway, Slaggy, so that's the setup. Why don't you explain the gameplay to Luigi's Mansion a little bit?
So basically, you are equipped with the Poltergust 3000, and it is a vacuum cleaner that allows you to capture ghosts and also gather treasure. And so basically, you're walking around the mansion, and there's a bunch of boos. They're, like, super cute. And you basically have to zap them up.
So you suck them up into your Poltergust, which is basically a vacuum cleaner. You use, there's like a dual stick mechanic to that, right?
Yes.
Well, had to pull away from the ghost on the right stick, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
In the opposite direction that they were pulling.
Yeah, so it was like, it was really interesting battle mechanic, you know, and, you know, the basic ghosts, you know, were pretty easy to suck up and,
Yeah, but the harder ones, you know, they'd move around a lot. You'd have to move the direction that you're pulling the stick in, you know, fairly rapidly. You'd have to sort of learn to anticipate which way different ghosts are going to move and stuff.
Yeah, and then especially, you know, with some of the boss battles and then in some rooms, there were just like some really clever puzzles, you know, involving like, oh, you've got to vacuum up the curtains to reveal that painting or, you know, something like that.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, while that is the primary battle mechanic, something about this game that I think is really cool, it's first off, it's super atmospheric. Like, I know that it's Luigi, and so, you know, it's a little bit silly, it's a little bit comedy, but, you know, Nintendo did go all in as far as, like, really committing to the theme of Luigi in a spooky mansion. So you're in this darkly lit mansion. There's a lot of lighting effects and stuff going on. But something that's really cool about the mansion, you're exploring it from, like, a three-quarter perspective, top-down view for most of the time. Not all the time, but for most of the time. And the environment around you is just very interactive. You can use the Poltergust, like, to put out candles and stuff. You can use it to, like Slaggy said, grab drapes and move them around the room. Sometimes there are,
like
chandeliers that will respond to the suction effect and start, like, shaking or swinging around as you're trying to, like, suck them up.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, the interaction with the environment almost, like, I mean, it's not a point-and-click interface, obviously, but it makes me think of, like, an adventure game.
Well, exactly. That was the exact point I was building to. I'm glad you went there, too. You know, we think of it as, like, a catch-the-ghost game, but really, I would say the core mechanic is more focused on the puzzle-solving and the exploration and environment interaction mechanics, which to me actually makes it feel like a very refreshing, very different and interesting game.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you like have to find a key that you get in some place, or, you know, like, I mean, it's just, you know, it was really an interesting change of pace, you know, for, you know, what we expected from the Mario universe, for sure.
And perhaps not surprisingly, this game was directed by Hideki Kono-san, whom, you know, we've talked about Kono-san somewhat recently. When we were talking about the Mario games, he was one of the directors on Yume Kojo, Doki Doki Panic. did work on, you know, some of the great games, the SNES port of SimCity, the original Super Mario Kart, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. So Kono-san is definitely someone who has his finger on, like, sort of different concepts. And he really brought a lot to the table with Luigi's Mansion, I feel. Likewise, the music was composed by Kazumi Totaka-san.
Oh, it yeah.
does include Totaka's song, which is like a whole thing at this point.
We should do a Totaka song micro or something.
We should, actually. We should. We had voice acting from, you know, the normal Mario voice actors, so that was really cool. And this is just a really cool game that, at the time, was actually really well-liked. The most liked features of the game were, obviously, the environmental interactive bits, and just, like, the ideas of this game were very strange. It's a very strange game, and that's what makes it so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I got a GameCube on launch day, and, you know, it was pretty much this and what, Wave Race?
Pretty much. I think that one of the Star Wars games was out, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I was just, I had a lot of fun. It was unfortunately after Halloween, but, you know, it was still, you know, a really, really fun time, and, you know, I just remember really enjoying it and exploring the mansion. And the thing that's really interesting is that this just started out as a tech demo, and then they just decided that they wanted to make it a full game.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not hard to see why. The core mechanic is very fun. Exploring the environment, finding little cute hidden things, hunting ghosts and stuff. It's just a really fun gameplay loop. It is noteworthy, of course, that the core game can be completed in like 5 hours, but there is a second mansion that opens up, and in fact in Europe my understanding is that they have like hell of stuff that opens up. Like, they have exclusive content in their version of the game, maybe to make up for the fact that they got it 6 months later than the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But it's a really great game. It can be found online for fairly reasonable prices, only released on the Nintendo GameCube, but obviously if you have a Wii, you're still set. And
yeah, this is one that I would love to see at least. I mean, I guess they don't really do GameCube releases on eShop, but I mean, I would love to see an HD re-release of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And hell, bundle it with an HD remaster of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, and you have a whole set worth paying for right there.
Yeah.
Truly. And, you know, the next game I want to talk about is actually a mini game, which appears in Nintendo Land for the Wii U.
You mean the best mini game?
Yeah, the best mini game. This is Luigi's Ghost Mansion. And Luigi's Ghost Mansion is based around asymmetrical gameplay.
It is like the best example of it from Nintendo Land.
I absolutely, absolutely agree. So the way the game works, it's a five-player game. You have a one person playing a ghost and four people playing Luigi, Mario, Waluigi, and Wario. And you're sort of like in a maze, almost like a Pac-Man style maze.
Pac-Man-like.
But it's themed as Luigi's Mansion. And the four player characters who are playing the humans, they have flashlights. And the ghost characters are trying to hunt the people who have flashlights. And the way that the gameplay mechanic works is that the ghost player has the Wii U gamepad in his hands. So he can see his own position in relation to the other characters. He has, you know, the whole game screen, but it shows him, and the version of the game screen on the TV that all of the human players are playing on does not show where the ghost is.
Except sometimes there'll be like a flash of lightning and you see, ha!
And you'll have just the briefest of glimpses of him. And, you know, everyone will then have to try and work together to corner the ghost or shine their flashlight on where they think the ghost is before the ghost sneaks up and gets them. It's tons of fun. I have had entire parties that have just become Luigi's Ghost Mansion parties.
Man, we should do that this Halloween.
We very well may. That alongside our PT playthrough, which may involve some live streaming of you playing PT,
yeah,
which
that's
will
why
be
I
amazing.
That's why I was suggesting this, because I might need a little levity after that.
So, anyway, I'm a huge fan of this game. I think it's the best game on Nintendo Land. I highly, highly, highly recommend you check it out.
I mean, I remember, we were playing this, Wii U launch night. And
we went until, 5 a.m.
Pretty much. And we were talking about, you know, how We would have paid for that as, you know, its own game if it had, like, you know, more maps and stuff and some other modes or something. That would have been worth a game itself.
Oh, absolutely. And I still, to this day, see the lack of Nintendo Land DLC for new maps and stuff as, like, a huge missed opportunity on Nintendo's part.
Yeah.
I think this game is tremendous. If you have a Wii U and you don't have Nintendo Land, I think it's worth grabbing for this game alone. If you have it, but you've never played this game, maybe you don't have, you know, friends over very often, set aside some time to do it. I promise you, it will not let you down.
Indeed.
So the next game to talk about here is a 3DS release. This was Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, released in Japan as Luigi's Mansion 2, and Europe, Australia, and Hong Kong as Luigi's Mansion 2. In North America, like I said, though, Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, developed by Next Level Games, published by Nintendo in 2013. It came out in most territories in late March of 2013, except for Korea and Hong Kong, who both got it in late July. Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, despite being on a portable console, actually takes the gameplay ideas from the original Luigi's Mansion and it just basically expands them in every direction.
It really does, yeah.
So you end up with, you know, the core game, which is a single player, and you're going through several mansions, five, so, you know, it sort of breaks away from the original game, which, you know, some people felt could use more environments to explore, and it adds more, like, hidden cute things, even more environment interaction, and it's a really great game. It's like, yeah, why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so basically, LOL story, but, you know, the idea is that the game takes place in Evershade Valley. Ooh, girl. And so the Dark Moon is this magical item that, like, pacifies the ghosts, and so you have to try and retrieve this so that the ghosts will not be evil and that they can just be, like, super chill and stuff. And yeah, it's you know, kind of more mission based than, you know, the original game,
but I feel like that structure actually serves the game well,
and especially, you know, for a portable title, I think it really suited it well. You know, of course, with the 3DS, you have the mini map, which I think you only had, I mean, you'd have to, like, pause it, you know, on the original, or use the Game Boy Horror, which was attaching your GBA to it.
Oh, yeah. The GameCube version had some silliness to it. And it was themed with, you know, your personal assistant or whatever being a Game Boy, like, horror-themed Game Boy called the Game Boy Horror, and there was, there was some silliness.
Yeah, and your Poltergust, which is the 5000 this time, has been upgraded, and so your flashlight has a, like, a strobe light kind of attached to it, so it, like, it actually stuns them, and then, like, there, you know, there's some that are vulnerable to it, and you know, in the first game they had some things like different elemental ghosts and elemental suctions or whatever for your vacuum. But, you know, in this game, it still feels really, you know, fun to suction up the ghosts and, you know, just kind of, you know, again, solving the puzzles and using the vacuum for more than just, you know, sucking up ghosts, like carrying things and pulling switches and all of that, which is just, like, I love that sort of thing in games anyways, like solving puzzles. But, I mean, especially when you get to use the vacuum to do it, I mean, it just makes it a lot of fun, so.
Yeah, so, you know, something interesting about this game, it ended up on the 3DS. Something interesting is that originally the GameCube hardware was actually designed for, like, 3D effects and stuff using 3D television. But they actually, you know, obviously scrapped that since TVs couldn't display 3D effects and 3D televisions didn't come along as quickly as Nintendo had expected. So
it's funny, you know, when you think of Wii being not in HD.
Right.
Like the flip side.
But, you know, you can almost see there, like, okay, they thought TVs didn't progress the way they thought they would, so they thought they were going to be safe a few years longer than they really were. The whole puzzle sort of comes together when you look at it scaled out, but when you look at it in chunks, yeah, it is pretty silly. But, you know, so they ended up porting some Luigi's Mansion stuff over, almost as, like, demo, just to see it in 3D, see how it works. And they ended up tapping Next Level Games, who they had previously worked with on the Punch-Out Wii game, The Mario Strikers soccer series, which we talked about here not too long ago. And development of the game actually started in 2009 with Miyamoto-san overseeing the production. So for him, it was a passion project because he wanted to see the game brought to life in 3D.
Yeah, and the original Luigi's Mansion was used to test the 3DS hardware, I believe.
I believe that's correct. So, you know, it's just, it's really cool. It's a great game. I think it's super rad. And one thing we didn't even talk about yet, it also has a whole suite of online modes.
Yeah.
It's really cool because, and I say modes, I guess I mean like difficulties and stuff, but it's one core mode called Scare Scraper, which has up to four players taking control of different colored Luigis, and you have randomly generated floors in a mansion to interact with, and you're all like working together to catch all of the ghosts, while also, in typical Nintendo fashion, competing to get the highest score among you. So it's a ton of fun. It sounds super basic when I explain it, but something about like the randomly generated element and the placement of ghosts and items are different every time. It just turns the game into a really fun experience with a handful of friends. And, you know, the fact that it you can play it either locally or online via Nintendo Network is just very cool. For me, it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, yeah, Nintendo makes games with good online now.
Yeah, so. And there's four different objectives. Hunter is where you have to capture all the ghosts. Rush, you need to find the exit. Polterpup is where you pursue and capture ghost dogs. And then there's Surprise, where it's just a random objective.
But the objective in Surprise changes each floor.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're doing a floor of all Polterpup and you just don't know. But no, it's like, okay, this floor is going to be Rush. The next one's going to be Surprise. The next one's going to be Hunter. The next one's going to be Polterpup. And it just keeps you on your toes. It's very cool. Super fun. I've put a lot of time into the multiplayer stuff myself. And this is another game where, luckily, this one is still in print. You can also get it on the eShop for 3DS. And it's totally worth the cost. It's one of those things, you know, Nintendo games retain their value. Expect to pay more than $25 for it. But the flip side to that is that's going to be $25 to get you a lot of fun times. So, like, do you have anything else to say before we take this to our last little bit?
Nope, let's move on.
Then the last game we're going to talk about here is a semi-remake of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. This is Luigi's Mansion Arcade. It was revealed by Sega in early 2015. We talked about it here on the show. It was developed by Capcom and released to Japanese arcades in the summer. It is currently testing in a small handful of Dave & Buster's locations in English in North America. And I haven't played it yet, but I've read about it a fair bit. And it sounds really cool. It's basically a first-person game. It uses, like, motion-controlled, like, vacuum cleaner attachments as, like, light guns. And it turns the game into, like, an on-rails light gun-style game in the vein
really
of, like, a House of the Dead or something. All of the art assets and locations are, like, upscaled from the 3DS release, Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, and it's the graphics look really good. The gameplay apparently plays super good. Like I said, I have not played it myself, but one of the sites, Nintendojo or Go Nintendo or Nintendo Everything, one of these sites that I often read was talking about how the game just plays super well. It has a two-player mode, and that they compared it favorably to playing games like House of the Dead or what have you with, you know, a co-op buddy.
Yeah.
So, super cool. Something, if you're in North America listening to this, you're probably gonna have the option to play this if you're near a Dave & Buster's. So I would definitely say check it out when it releases in North American arcades.
Yeah, we should see where the closest one is for us.
I don't think there's a location particularly close yet, but there's a Dave & Buster's in Milpitas, which
is a
20-minute drive. So we'll talk about that off the air. Saigi, overall, what do you think of the Luigi's Mansion series?
I think it's a really fun series. You know, as someone who had never played Mario is missing, I'd known about it, but, you know, just never wanted to bother with it.
You are missing so little.
Right? Mario is missing nothing. you know, I, as someone who'd also been a longtime fan of Luigi, you know, I used to draw Luigi fan art and, like, put it up all over my room. I just always identified with him, and especially, you know, when they would characterize him as being, like, a little more timid and stuff. Like, I really latched on to this game and was, like, really thrilled to see it grow. It's starting to grow into a franchise now. And I'd say that a lot of what we, you know, have come to know Luigi to be, and kind of just the whole meme of him and you're Luigi and like the way that, you know, we kind of see his personality. I think a lot of that really developed with Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know, Luigi did in the games to some degree have a personality, but I really feel like the current sort of personality that Luigi has in the games and Smash Brothers, where he's, you know, a little bit silly, a little bit dorky, kind of awk. I really feel like that.
You mean in, like the way he literally flings himself into people?
Right? I really feel like a lot of that started in that first Luigi's Mansion. And I think that it's really interesting to sort of take a look at and appreciate in context.
Indeed.
So I just overall, I'm a big fan of Luigi's Mansion this as a series. I love the fact that it's really more of a puzzle game than it is like an action game or anything. And, you know, something that's really cool is that this series, you know, it's actually doing pretty well.
Yeah, it was like the fifth best-selling GameCube title.
Yeah, and Dark Moon is currently the seventh best-selling 3DS title, which on the 3DS is a big deal. 3DS has a lot of big sellers now.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed that this series is going to go on and keep being a franchise that Nintendo builds on, because I would really be disappointed if we didn't get more.
Indeed. So before we move on, I want to share our answers to the Social Links question of the week.
Woohoo!
We said this week we're shining a
Game Bluey.
This week we're shining a Game Bluey flashlight on Luigi's Mansion. What do you think of the Playfully Spooky series? So over on Twitter, we heard from GamerFox saying, "The original was fun, quirky, engaging, and refreshingly different. Haven't played Dark Moon, but I need to. It was great to see Luigi in a leading role, too, because why not? It also showed us there is such a thing as paper money in the Mario universe. Carrying sackfuls of coins isn't practical." It's true, it did have paper money. And over on Facebook, we also asked the bone-chilling bonus question, what would you like to see in possible future installments in the franchise? So we got some responses from Travis K, who is Gamer Fox. Just chiming in some more, so we're super glad. Saying, "I've only played the first game, so I can't really comment, but I'd definitely like to see another console entry pop up in the future." I totally agree. I would love to see, whether it's for Wii U or NX, you know, I definitely want to see more. And as far as what he would like to see in future installments, Mario. Just kidding. No, that's what he said. Mario. Just kidding. Those were his words.
Ah. All right. Well, then with all that having been said, let's talk about some rumors.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
So the first big rumor we have here, and it is a doozy, is that according to The New Yorker, Hideo Kojima has left Konami and Kojima Productions as of October 9th.
That was a doozy of a doozy.
They have spoken to people that claim that they were at Kojima's departure ceremony, saying that it was overall actually a rather cheerful but emotional goodbye. However, none of Konami's staff, president, CEOs were present.
Which of course they weren't, because that's shady as hell.
Right? Apparently, according to The New Yorker, Kojima-san cannot talk about his departure from the company due to an NDA, and he has a non-competition clause which runs through the rest of the year. So we may not hear a lot about Kojima moving on anytime soon, but supposedly this is all true. Final Fantasy XV director Hajime Tabata-san also came in and talked to The New Yorker about like how big of a shock this is, and you know, it's just really strange that a highly successful studio has been shut down like this. The reason why I keep using, you know, supposedly and rumor in this discussion is because Konami has now put out a release that, you know, all of this is untrue. Kojima-san is out of the office, but it's only on a vacation, and they anticipate that he'll be back soon.
Those are shady lies. I just know it.
So I do agree. I do believe they're shady lies. But strictly speaking, right now, this puts it all still in the realm of rumor.
Yeah, he's on a gag order is what he is.
Yeah, well, that is certainly what it sounds like. And what else we have here in the In rumor world is the rumor that we are upcoming going to be getting a new Valkyria Chronicles game.
Oh.
This is based on the fact that, and this is a fact, that Sega recently registered a trademark for Aoki Kakume no Valkyria, which roughly translates to Valkyria of the Blue Revolution.
Ooh.
So this is something that's super, super exciting to those of you, those of us, I should say, who love Valkyria Chronicles. It's a fantastic game, and I would absolutely love if it makes a comeback. We do all know for a fact that the game released on Steam about a year ago now, and in its first weekend, massively outsold Sega's expectations for the lifetime of the product on Steam. So, having found a home on Steam, who knows? Maybe this franchise is going to come back after all. Fingers crossed, and don't stop believing.
Hold on to that feeling.
Right? We will update you when and if we hear more about Blue Valkyria Revolution, whatever.
Indeed.
Saeed, do you have any other rumors?
No, but I do have some feedback in the form of social links.
Oh, we're not going to talk about what we've been playing?
Oh yeah, I guess we should. I just was so excited to share some of our feedback from last week. So let's do our what's up first.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Slaggy, what have you been playing this week?
So, of course, I've been putting more time into Mario Maker.
Woohoo!
Just completed a set of levels I call Java Land, which is a jungle-themed land, so it's got lots of vines and stuff. And the feedback that I've received is that some of the levels are pretty tricky. So, and you know, that's always good feedback. I really appreciate when people are honest about, you know, my levels and stuff. And, you know, I sometimes worry that either they're too difficult or too easy or whatever. So it's good to get other people's perspectives. I'm trying to work on some other styles for change, but then every time I start, like, I really want to make a new Super Mario Brothers U style level, but I just can't get one started that I feel right with, and I just want to, like, go back to Mario World, so...
Back to Mario World.
So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely having a good time with that. I took down some of my lower ranked ones to make room for hopefully better levels. So yeah, I'm still looking forward to, you know, playing around more with that. And, you know, still, I think it really goes to show that, you know, 6 weeks later, I'm still like barely scratching the tip of the iceberg. And speaking of icebergs, I really want snow and desert levels, please. You know, even if it's just, you know, skins for, like, the outdoor level.
It is so damn jank that we have ice blocks and not an ice theme.
Right?
Like, I don't even want to use ice blocks because even though I'm mechanically interested, I don't want to use them without the theme. And so help me, Slaggy, if you get any guffaws or I told you so's, I will frown at you super hard.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm the same way. I am really dorky about, like, aesthetic and stuff, at least when it comes to, you know, Mario levels. And the only time I've used ice blocks is in my Buzzy Burrows level, which is, like, the Mario 3 underground level, because it looked okay there.
Okay.
I always thought those underground levels looked like they were, like, in, like, snow caverns or something.
Oh, totally. Yeah, with that really weird, almost, like, diamond-y effect on the rocks.
Yes.
All right.
And I finished my first playthrough of Read Only Memories.
Tell me about that. Tell me about that. It's very exciting that that's out now.
Yeah, as I talked about last time, I had just...
Keep it spoiler-free, please.
Oh, of course. I'm just saying, as I talked about last time, I had just gotten started, and, you know, basically, I hadn't gotten much further than I did in the prologue that had been available, you know, but I went through and I finished it. You know, I realized I've seen a lot of people in their, like, reviews and stuff say, you know, that they put in, like, 10 hours of gameplay, and I did it in about 5, which tells me that there's probably a lot that I missed out on, and just, you know, having chatted with the developers about it, you know, I know there's already a lot more there, and even just, like, you know, in terms of interacting with stuff and, you know, revisiting areas that I didn't even think to revisit, but, you know, I really enjoyed the story a lot. You know, the character Turing is the little robot mascot and has been the little robot mascot of GamerX from the beginning. So I always thought like that it was just a cute little robot. But now that they're the star of their own game, you know, I'm just like, I really love the way that they brought them to life. And, I mean, the story, I just really love the story. The characters, I mean, which is good because, you know, for an adventure game, you know, it's got to have a good story and, you know, memorable characters to really, you know, bring it together. I mean, I say it's got to, but, you know, there are good adventure games that, you know, probably are just, like, by yourself or whatever. But I'm getting off the track. You know, the story is really good. And without getting into spoiler territory, just, you know, the way that they explored themes of identity and, you know, kind of discrimination based on your identity and all of that is just really well done. You know, the game in its development phase and its crowdfunding phase kind of had been, like, earmarked as, like, oh, it's the queer game. And, I mean, there's plenty of queer characters, but you know, it really explores, I say it would explore queer themes without, you know, shoving, you know, sexuality stuff down your throat. I mean, just the idea of otherness and identity, I mean, without going into detail. And it's just, I really, really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to doing a more thorough playthrough and just seeing what other branches, because there's apparently multiple endings, so I really enjoyed the ending I got, and I thought the final part of the game was really, like, really well written and, like, had really strong emotional appeal and stuff, so it's hard for me to talk about it without going into spoiler territory, so you should put in some time when you're able to, because I want to talk to you about it.
Awesome. Yeah, I will definitely. I've downloaded it off Steam already. I just haven't been able to wrench myself away from Destiny for long enough to play it.
And I mean, for what it's worth, it makes me want to find a way to mostly legally play Snatcher, because I mean, you know, it owes a lot to Snatcher, but a lot of the reviewers you know, over on Steam say that, you know, it's better than Snatcher in some ways because Snatcher had some problematic portrayals of, like, women and such, so, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it's definitely true. The thing is, Snatcher is very much, well, I don't mean to come here and mansplain Snatcher. It came from a time and place. That time and place is not now, but it's right. For its time, it was really something.
I feel like we were talking about that with Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When we were talking on Anime Buoy about Indeed. Vampire Hunter D, you know, some things just don't click as well now as they did 20, 30 years ago, and it is what it is.
Yeah, but I really want to explore, like, some more of those, and like the Gabriel Knights, Rise of the Dragon, is that correct? Or
yes.
Is it another animal? Okay. I'm like, was it another animal? And I kind of expect that you can look forward to Adventure Buoy sometime next year, probably.
I would have to think.
What you been playing, Captain Spike?
So for me, as you've probably already gathered, the big
one is
Destiny. Yeah, I've been playing so much Destiny. In fact, I've already made plans to play after we finish recording, before I start editing tonight, that is. So I'm, you know, I'm super, super into it. Cannot get enough. I literally on weekends have been waking up early to get some Destiny time in before I have social obligations. Really loving it. But the other thing is that I'm still loading up Mario Maker pretty much every night. I've played pretty much every stage that every one of my hearted friends, has uploaded. So I'm kind of like fiending. Like, why aren't y'all still playing Mario Maker?
Oh, I am.
I'm still building levels, still uploading them. I know a couple of our listeners, some of you lovely folks out there, are still playing, still starring, still hearting, giving me comments and stuff. I appreciate it. And your feedback is always really super helpful for me making better levels and learning about game design.
You haven't put one up this week, have you?
I think I did. I thought I uploaded one on maybe Tuesday night.
Which one?
I mean, I couldn't tell you its name, but I'm pretty sure I did.
The one with the airship that you were working on? Is that one, did you tweak that one yet?
I don't know. I'd have to look, but I'm pretty sure I uploaded one this week. Well, if not, I'll upload one tonight. I was at dinner last night before going to a rock concert and totally had an idea for a Mario Maker level while I was sitting at dinner. So, I'm gonna. The other big game I've been playing is Dragon Ball Z Extreme Budoden, is the Arc System Works Dragon Ball Z fighting game. We talked about it in the news today.
We did.
I'm enjoying it. I played it on import when it first came out, so I knew what I was getting into. It's kind of basic, but a competitive scene for the game is actually starting to emerge in Japan.
Interesting.
And as they work out the intricacies of the battle system, it's becoming more interesting to play. So definitely exciting stuff. But that's about it. Mostly those three games. Also, Final Fantasy Record Keeper on my phone in my spare time.
Cool.
Anyways, you want to move on to those social links?
Yeah, we got some feedback from last time on our episode Leave Luck to Hell, which, by the way, if you didn't catch that reference, the name Nintendo translates to Leave Luck to Heaven, so that's why we named our spoopy episode Leave Luck to Hell. David Edward P. says, great episode as always. It's our friend over on Twitter, better known as Edward Wong 4, right?
Super sweet. Thank you.
We got a tweet from our buddy Brondorf from the Nintendo Fun Club podcast saying, ooh, sounds like a rad episode. And last but certainly not least, we got a tweet from Lil Daddy's Pizza saying, in regards to last week, I felt the podcast was extra good today. Not sure what it was.
It's probably that we just kept ourselves to a minimum and shut up faster than usual.
No, he was talking about last time when we were mentioning Little Daddy's Pizza a lot.
Oh, we should bring him up a bunch of times then, because he is amazing. He does still make the best Mario level makers, and he is still...
Mario level makers. Look at you getting tongue-tied.
He is still A++++ in my book.
Little Daddy's Pizza. Little Daddy's Pizza. Little Daddy's Pizza.
Little Daddy's
Little Daddy,
Pizza,
Daddy's,
Bowie.
Daddy's Little Pizza.
Okay, no, this is enough. Sorry, we like you a lot, but I'm cutting it off.
Little Daddy's Pizza. So, Captain Spike. Oh, wait, it's still me, isn't it? So, we love when you give us feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews, even when iTunes is being wonky as hell. We like when you check us out on Stitcher Radio. It's a great place, and it usually works better than iTunes. I'm not getting paid to say that. And we love all those social medias that the kids are doing these days. So we don't do the Snapchats.
Everybody's doing them emails.
Everybody's doing the emails. We don't do the Snapchats or the Instagrams or anything like that.
We do personally, but...
Yeah, but I mean, like, that the children are using these days. But we do like Facebook, and we effing love Twitter.
Well, no, I wouldn't say I like Facebook, but like us on Facebook.
Yeah, like us on Facebook, and we'll like you. And we effing love Twitter.
We love Twitter.
Like, honestly, sorry to sidebar, but, I mean, this episode was short, so we...
No, you're not.
Like, when people are like, I don't really like Twitter, I'm like, I don't get it. I effing love Twitter.
Yeah, that is very confusing for me, because I like Twitter so much.
So you can tweet us at GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And you can also email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And you can check out our complete episode archive over at GameBuoy.org.
Check out our complete episode archive at GameBuoy.org.
Oh, is that your impression of me? That's real cute. Captain Spike, let's get... onto the shout-outs.
As ever and always, my first shout-out goes to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd be remiss not to mention Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister site, Enos Lives, which apparently is a little less focused on podcasting at the moment, but is still going to have written content based on all of their love of the PlayStation family. You should also go check out Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out Slaggy's podcast, Reading is Fundamental, where he talks about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, with assists from myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness.
How come you didn't call that a sister show?
We have a real good time with it, and hopefully you will listen to it and also have a good time. You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. And last but never, ever, 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 ever least, Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, you know where to take us.
Game Bar is the gay video game prairie home companion.
I wanna take you to a game bar.
And a part of the Hunty Bunch. Along with Koopa Club, an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist, the award was from their mothers. Also, along with Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. I'm going to change that acronym to LGBQT, and which is not meant to dismiss any of the you know.
We all get it. You were trying to low-key flirt.
And
there is some QTs.
Speaking of QTs, we got some QTs over on La Palanca Podcast. Podcast por y para gay gamers Latino Americanos en Español. So we love our hunty bunch, and we really thank you all for your support. We'd also like to shout out to the Voice of Geeks Network, that's VogNetwork.com, where you can hear great shows such as the aforementioned Orange Lounge Radio, the also aforementioned Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, and shows like Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And then if you're into the animes from Japan, that Japanese cartoon fad that all the kids are doing these days, you might want to check out a little show called Anime Buoy, which is your, is that a port of call? It was supposed to be your shout out, but
yeah, it's a port of call. And you are the one who was like, I want to do it.
I thought you were going to do it.
Anyway, keep going.
So it's your port of call for anime news and views and tidbits and recommendations. So you know what we do here.
You're sloppy.
You know what we do here, and if you like anime, we try to give, you know, the similar buoy perspective over there. A little more scaled down for sure, but, you know, we're enjoying it and hope that you do too.
All right, well, with all that
The Zelda Reorchestrated.
What about Zelda Reorchestrated?
Thank you for doing our music, and we miss you.
Thank you for being a
thank
friend.
Thank you for doing our music.
Well, with all that having been said, thank you so much for listening. We could not do this show without all of you out there, you lovely, lovely, lovely people. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to us as much as we've enjoyed talking to you this lovely Sunday afternoon. So we'll be back at you in a week or two to talk about more Nintendo stuff.
Yep, still got those Ninty 90s.
Still got those Ninty 90s. But in the meantime, keep gaming, keep thinking, and Kurai no Kutan.
Okay, let me know when you're ready to start the discussion, because before we actually start, I want to say something stupid.
Oh, so business as usual then.
Rude.
Controversial. It's controversial, okay?
Well, I think that was a good episode.
Yeah, actually, I agree. I think it went pretty well. It went a little longer than I thought it would, but, you know, it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Oh, so this is how I sound when I'm talking on air?
I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, I just got to say that you were getting into smooth jazz radio territory with Orange Lounge Radio. You were like, who asked you so many of my cues? Here's to all you lonely lovers out there listening at the late night show.
Here's to all you lovely, lonely listeners out there listening to our late night show.
And
I'm going to play this one out. Let's go.
This one goes out to out to Layla in the 650.
You've killed it.
You killed it.